Financial news you can use. Financial planning, savings, retirement planning, tax and estate strategies, and more. This is Money Sense with Kevin Hegedus and Brent Laux. Kevin Hegedus, certified financial planner, is the founder of PWM Financial Services, Inc. and a registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. If you would like to learn more about the financial services provided, call today to schedule a portfolio review or visit pwmprivatewealth.com. This is Money Sense with Kevin Hegedus and Brent Laux.
On our Money Sense program this weekend, we're talking about the state of the markets. We'll get the show going after this break. Welcome to this week's edition of Money Sense. I'm your host, Brent Laux, and I'm joined today by Andrew Rodick. Andrew, you've heard on the program numerous times. He's a registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners. He's a partner of PWM Private Wealth Counsel. Andrew is also a chartered investment manager. He holds a master's degree in public policy, and he does bring a wealth of experience to his work with clients on their financial journeys. Andrew, always a pleasure. Welcome back to Money Sense.
Thank you, Brent. Glad to be here.
You know, in all of the programs that you and I have done, I've known you to come with the data. And I suspect we're going to need a lot of that today, as our topic is a combination of looking at the year in the stock market so far, but also I think we'll dive into what really is what we would call an average year in the markets. Not sure that average stock market year is even a fair turn of phrase, Andrew.
Yeah, we will need to unpack the definition of average stock market year. But should I start with diving into this year so far, Brent?
Yes, please do. That sounds good. I've heard a lot about this rally back and the V-shaped market bounce. So take our listeners through that, if you would.
Yeah, the performance of the S&P 500, which we really use as kind of a proxy for the broad U.S. stock market, and then the TSX here in Canada, it's been quite interesting this year, you know, reflecting various economic events and market reactions, especially reaction to what's been happening south of the border.
Oh my gosh, interesting. I would say that's probably an understatement, Andrew.
Yeah, without a doubt, Brent. I think on our last show together, interesting headlines were the topic of the day. And it wasn't too long ago that I was on this show talking about navigating market volatility as well. We've sure had some volatility in 2025, starting with that S&P 500. That index started the year at around 5,800 points, just short of actually 5,900 points. And in the worst of the tariff tantrums, that index was actually under 5,000 points. And now we've seen that index, it's rallied back. And now we're actually sitting a little bit over 5,900 points. We're getting closer and closer to almost 6,000. And so as it kind of moves around this current range, we're more or less flat on the year, you know, depending on the day. Sometimes we're about 1% up. The market sentiments are staying relatively resilient despite some of these economic headwinds. Key factors obviously influencing this performance include the Federal Reserve's very cautious approach to interest rate hikes in the United States, which has held and really helped maintain some investor confidence. And then we've had some strong earnings reports from some of the major tech companies. Now, interestingly, the tech-heavy NASDAQ index, it's actually struggled a little bit more, but it's down approximately 2.5% year to date as of this recording. And, you know, earnings as well have, you know, when we've looked at some of the AI news, it's helped to some degree. And certainly the NASDAQ, it's much improved from its lows in April. And then if we're, you know, Brent, if we're talking about the TSX, we're talking about the Canadian side of the stock market, you know, it's held fairly neutral. You know, starting the year, we were about 24,749 points, and then we dropped down to around the 22,000 mark. And now we've actually, you know, we've seen some of that rally back that you're talking about. We were just over 26,000 points by the end of May. So really, year to date, the TSX has performed much better than folks maybe realize. And it's up slightly over 6%.
And I'd agree. That's actually very surprising. I don't know if the audience, unless they're following things very closely, would realize just how resilient our Canadian market has been, especially in light of the tariff and economic headlines of March and April.
Right. Yeah, no, the North American indices have faced challenges. And obviously some of those are geopolitical. We've even had some changing oil price pressure, but of course, global economic slowdown news, concerns over those U.S. tariffs. Now we have these pauses in tariffs. We've had some U.S. court rulings in play, though that came out last week. Also trade deals being negotiated and announced. So looking ahead, investors will be closely watching these economic indicators. They're going to be looking at things like corporate earnings and central bank policies, as I was mentioning earlier. They're going to try to figure out what really will be the future direction of the markets alongside the trade policy part of the economic equation. As we were finishing May, the market got some U.S.-China trade tension news, and that actually spooked the market. It pushed the year to date negative, and now we've kind of recovered through this week a little bit off of that news. That's the kind of treading water some of the markets are doing in this current environment. And the performance so far, it suggests a cautiously optimistic outlook, but market conditions can change rapidly. Even this week, we have the OECD, which looks at large developed country outlooks. It's saying that global economic growth, of course, citing the impact of the Trump trade policy, it's saying, well, you know, we're going to see a slowdown in global economic growth. The U.S. economy, the OECD forecast, it's gone from 2.8% growth last year, saying this year we're looking at 1.6% for the U.S. And into next year, they're thinking maybe 1.5%.
Andrew, on our last program, I recall we discussed bearish versus bullish sentiments. So are the mind then, are the bulls back looking at this rally back from the lows earlier this year? It certainly starts to feel like it.
Yeah. You know, Brent, we talked also on that show about an index that I look at. It's the CNN Fear and Greed Index. It's an interesting source to take a look at versus just reviewing the current levels of the S&P or the TSX. The Fear and Greed Index, just a recap for any listeners that didn't have a chance to hear that past show, it's a tool that measures investor sentiment in the stock market. And it's looking at seven key indicators, including market momentum, stock price strength, and volatility measures. So the way it's represented is that the index ranges from 0 to 100, with 0 indicating extreme fear sentiment and 100 indicating extreme greed. At this point in time, the index has actually been fighting back from a deep low. It was down to 3 in April. And so you're talking about that sentiment piece, Brent. Well, it was down to 3 in April. Then we were into the 40s only a month ago. As of now, we're back into the greed category. We're at about 57, but last week we were even as high as 67.
Just a little bit on volatility going on there. And maybe before we even even start talking about an average market year, Andrew, could you give us some insight into what's going on with international markets outside of North America?
For sure. Now, for the listeners, when we look at indexes, it can get tricky to isolate for international markets. It's not as if there is one international stock market exchange. But to give you some sense of the general returns, I've brought data on two indices. One is called the MSCI World X USA Index. So it factors in all the major developed stock market indexes, not including the U.S. However, of course, that means Canadian markets are included in this index. And looking at the data from MSCI, Canada right now would make up approximately 11% of the country composition. But you also have European, Asian, Oceanic country exposure. So, for example, Japan's market makes up approximately 19.5% of the index. So this is where diversification in a portfolio construction becomes more evident, Brent. And this index, if we look at this one, it's up 16% year to date.
Wow, that's impressive. So we have the U.S. market just maintaining its position, while international markets are seeing double-digit positive returns.
That's right. That's right, Brent. And if you want to look at emerging markets where there traditionally has been more volatility, but also where countries that were majorly targeted by the U.S. tariffs, including China, are indexed, well, the MSCI Emerging Markets Index is really the key data set there. And this index, it includes China, India, Taiwan, and Korea, to name a few of the stock markets in that index. Year to date, that index is up 10.10%.
So there is green on the board if you begin to look beyond the U.S. market. And I think it reflects why diversification in your portfolio is so important. You really don't know where performance is going to come from.
That's right. You can't predict year to year where single stocks, markets, or even overall asset classes are going to be for the best performers. So when you're holding a broader mix, it really can make a difference in helping your portfolio stay aligned to your financial goals and helping you manage the risk for your investment needs overall.
You're listening to Money Sense. We're back after this break. On our Money Sense program this weekend, I'm joined by Andrew Rodick, registered portfolio manager with Q Wealth Partners and a partner of PWM Private Wealth Counsel. First half of our program talking about the year in markets. On to our second half, our second topic, Andrew, which is the discussion around average returns. Now, I hear these numbers year to year, and I wonder, is there truly an average? Many financial advisors and mutual fund companies tout these annualized rates of return between 7 and 8%. But what's the actual average that you see in the markets?
Well, going back to our earlier jokes about definitions, Brent, I genuinely believe investors struggle with this concept of average, and it's not their fault that they would. They see average rates of return or annualized rates of return over several years, and the aspect that is sometimes overlooked conceptually is that the number of years, it really blends the trend line. You can have peaks and valleys in returns, but finding that average line and then stating that number, well, it's sometimes, maybe the best way to put it, it's somewhat of a mind distortion effect for many people.
So people aren't misunderstanding the concept of average, but perhaps they're misrepresenting the experience of average in their portfolios?
That's a very good way to phrase it, Brent. I'm going to use the S&P 500. And again, that's the index that looks at the 500 largest publicly traded stocks in the U.S. It captures the largest global market capitalization, and it's such a significant part of many portfolios because of that. So it's really an effective way to discuss averages with investors. So returning to the averages you were talking about earlier, you know, 7 and 8%, sometimes these are frequently mentioned by advisors or advertisements. It's crucial to recognize that these average return years for the S&P 500, well, they're actually quite rare. If we examine the historical data for the S&P since 1950, and you highlight the years where returns fell between 5 and 10% in a given year, we find that there have only been six instances where the S&P 500 returned within that range of 5 to 10%. Most years, the returns are actually either significantly higher or significantly lower than this, quote, average return.
Okay, I just need to clarify this. So the U.S. stock market over the past 75 years only had what are called average years six times?
You nailed it, Brent. You nailed it. By organizing the data this way, it actually becomes pretty clear that the distribution of these annual returns is far from even when we look at the spread of it. So the majority of the years show that returns much greater or much less than that 5 to 10% range. And then you've got these extreme outliers on both ends. So what this really is suggesting, Brent, is that while we might expect returns to fall near the middle of the spectrum in any given year, and you were talking about folks' expectations of the word average, well, the reality is that the market is much more volatile and it's much more unpredictable. So for investors, if we've got this variability in annual returns, what we're reinforcing here is with this data more than anything, what we're reinforcing is the importance of maintaining a long-term perspective and managing those expectations. It's critical not to base investment decisions solely on this idea that markets are going to perform predictable or average in every given year. So you have to stay disciplined and focused on the long-term goals, and you have to be able to weather these periods. You have to show, you know, you're going to have some strong growth, and then you're also going to have some market downturns. And additionally, this really highlights the need to diversify and maintain a strategy that accounts for these potential extremes in market performance.
So then to get to these average returns, how long you own, or should I say how long you hold your positions, really matters.
I like that you use the word hold there, Brent. You know, you're forecasting on the data I brought a little bit, right? So I'll add another data set here for you, Brent. The data shows that the longer holding periods historically lead to higher returns for the S&P 500. So whether you're considering a 1 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, or even longer periods, well, the returns have generally increased with the length of time that an investment is held. For instance, the average return over a 1 year period is significantly lower than over a 10 or a 20. So this data highlights the power of time in smoothing out that short-term volatility and capitalizing on the market's long-term growth.
Andrew, this has been a fascinating conversation on averages in the market. Someone listening right now and they're hearing that average, in air quotes, isn't really what you should be thinking of as your return in the markets in any given year. How then do they use this in their investment management?
Well, at Q Wealth Partners, we believe it's important to share with our clients that investment risk is based on a mix of factors. So you've got your goals, you've got time horizon, you might have current employment, you've got your attitudes towards volatility. We've talked about the psychology of investing previously on this show and things of the like. So reflecting on this year, the market's volatility and our discussion on average market returns, well, it underscores the need to uphold a long-term perspective. And you got to shape your expectations appropriately. So given the significant fluctuations in annual returns, it's really essential not to rely on the assumption that markets will behave in this consistent or average manner yearly. So maybe breaking this down, you know, what we're thinking about is what's the long term, you know, and how do folks need to think about their investing time horizon? And that's part of risk management in portfolio construction too. So are you planning to use your money soon? Or are you keeping a close eye on daily market changes? Well, then maybe the short term is crucial for you. Maybe certain equity investments are not appropriate. On the other hand, if you're looking at a longer time frame, whether it's years or even decades, taking a long term perspective becomes vital. So we aim to help you understand this through your financial plan. And the financial plan, we can develop that in a way which really outlines what we call your personal rate of return. What rate of return you need to meet your goals. It's normal to feel uneasy about short-term volatility, but if you're keeping your focus on the bigger picture, that can really help ease those worries. So historically, the markets have tended to grow over the long haul. So when you keep your eyes on those long-term goals, when you look at your personal rate of return that you need to meet your financial plan objectives, it's going to make you a little bit more at ease, give you that peace of mind, even when the economy or markets may feel a bit shaky.
I want to thank Andrew Rodick for joining us on Money Sense this weekend. You're listening to our program. You'd like to find out more about getting a financial plan going for you with the offices of PWM. Give them a call at 306-975-9500. Check them out online, pwmprivatewealth.com. This is Money Sense. Financial planning services are offered through PWM Private Wealth Council. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. PWM Private Wealth Council is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. You've been listening to Money Sense.